Hello, we're the Salisbury Museum Young Producers Lab. We're a group of young people who meet every week at the museum and get involved with what's going on, from helping with curation to creative projects. And this is our podcast. We wanted to showcase some of the most interesting stories we have discovered in our work on the new Salisbury galleries and delve deeper into their background and all the amazing conversations they might inspire. How can these old stories make us think differently about the world today?
Episode 1. Strange and terrible news from Salisbury and Bunnan and the Salisbury witch trials. How do you think it feels to be a witch in Salisbury? Would you feel confident telling people? Want to share your practice with friends on social media? Witchcraft is something that has seen a resurgence in recent times, but the positive healing and celebration of nature and the ancient seasonal celebrations is very different from how witchcraft was perceived in the 16th, 17th, and even into the 18th century.
The story of Anne Boden. So where do we start? Salisbury's actually a city that has one of the most important witchcraft stories of all. The story of a woman in her 80s whose accusation and trial travelled all the way to New England, influencing the most famous witch trials of all in Salem, Massachusetts. But to understand the strange turn of events, we need to go back to the story itself. Who was Anne Boden? What happened in Salisbury? And why was this now somewhat forgotten witch trial so important? So, Anne Boden was in her 80s and spent her life as a cunning woman, someone who was a healer who dabbled with magic and herbs. She was referred to as Mistress Boden, not goodwife, showing a higher status. The Goddards, relatively well off, were not happy. This was because Richard Goddard had lost money siding with the king in the Civil War. His first wife having died, he ended up remarrying a woman named Hester, and this woman, Hester, feared her two stepdaughters wished to kill her. So, Hester then sent her maid to Anne Boden for some help. Anne Boden then gave a solution, white arsenic, and sent Anne Stiles, the maid, to bring her to some to burn as a protective spell. Hester then wanted to plant this on her stepdaughters. Anne Stiles is suspected and escaped, accused of planning murder and purchasing arsenic. Stiles then declares that Boden is a witch, leading to her charges disappearing. One accusation was that she summoned spirits in the form of ragged boys to fetch herbs from the magic from Wilton. Another, that she forced Anne Stiles to sign a contract in blood with the devil, which was seen as a common witchcraft practice. Boden was found guilty even after she protested her innocence. Her trial inspired endless publicity at the time, including a famous ballad called The Salisbury Assizes, which was disrupted wildly. She was then hanged for witchcraft in 1653.
So that could almost sound like the fear of witchcraft and that kind of the people who were doing the witch hunts. It was a kind of a sort of sense of control that kind of then created mass hysteria. And this idea of mass hysteria and the context of an unsettled and fast-changing society with all the insecurities that entails is really fascinating. Do you see any parallels with the world today? Because many would argue that we live in another age of anxiety.
Well, I think after the huge upheaval of the Civil War, there was a lot for people to be anxious about. And there wasn't much to blame it on, and there wasn't much to see where people would be going next. And I think there was a real fear of the unknown.
But what about today? Can you see parallels with today?
In the, 16th, 17th centuries, their idea of mass hysteria and age of anxiety was all about witchcraft and that evolving very rapidly. But nowadays it's reflected with AI and technology and how that is really evolving very fast, and how do we believe if we can listen or rely on the internet and AI? Is it a true thing, or are they lying to us, kind of thing? So yeah.
Yes, it goes right down to the core of how do we tell what is true in the world and what is, you know, fake news, what is real news, what news should be news. Do you think that will have any kind of implications for the future?
I think it does. I think it could predict instability if everyone's not believing one another and not believing this or this news, and then everyone can start disagreeing with each other and kind of creating this, again, division in the world about what people believe in and not.
What does anyone else think about that? Do you think we live in an age of anxiety?
I think we do, which has been almost heightened potentially by COVID and the pandemic, which shows similarities back to the 16th and 17th century, where there were many diseases and illnesses at play, because with the pandemic, after not sort of life broke down almost, and it changed, and we haven't quite got back to normal, or what used to be normal, anymore. And so that has put people in a position of anxiety and fear, and it reflects the idea of fear of change, because things change so rapidly that...
And knowing what to believe as well, I think, stems from that, because both in COVID, with AI, with some of the political happenings of the world at the moment, that sense of what is real, and also the rise of conspiracy theories. Have any of you noticed a real rise in conspiracy theories?
Yeah, me especially, I've noticed. Like, I use social media quite a lot, and I know a couple of you do too. Like, you see them all the time. There'll be videos online where it'll be explaining to you this new conspiracy theory that you'll never have heard of before, but it all sounds so convincing because, you know, somebody said it to you, it sounds plausible. But sometimes it's so implausible, is that the right word? Sometimes it's so implausible that it's like, how could you even come up with that sort of thing? Like, witches kind of ring true with that. So, but obviously they came in the 16th and 17th century, it wasn't so much, the science didn't drive theories back then. Like, it was religion. Religion was the thing that influenced people the most. And I think that's different today. A lot of us take it from people who are quite influential to us, that kind of resonates with religion, but...
Witch hunters were like influencers in a really dystopian influencers.
Yeah, in some light.
Yeah, that's really interesting, I think.
Yeah, no, I just thought, you know, you've got to have somebody who has a influence over you to have that impact.
And also mentioning science. So actually, science and atheism kind of went quite hand in hand often in the days. And there was a fear of science that we would just today accept as kind of absolute fact and actually quite reassuring because we know it's real.
Yeah.
In those days, was as threatening to people as maybe the idea of, you know, AI and deep fakes and chatbots and all these things might be to us now, or conspiracy theories, or what is real.
Could you imagine how they'd enhance witches if they had that sort of technology back then? Jeez.
Interesting point.
I know.
If they saw the stuff we have today, who knows what they would think. It would be, you're all witches. But they would blame everything as being a witch, because... And I think that's the thing. If they couldn't explain something, they thought it was a witch, and that was their way of explaining it. But we can't explain, or us ourselves can't explain the internet. So what's our reason? How do we explain that? It's
again coming from that place of influence, isn't it? Somebody's told you that this is something that you can use, just go ahead and use it. Obviously, I'm not saying the internet is magic. I'm saying that somebody's just gone to you and said, like, use this, and we've grown up with it. I don't think any of us here have even had, like, no touch from the internet. Yeah, even as, like, teenagers think things started? No, before that, no. You would have been like, really? Jeez. sorry. You look much younger than that. Anyways.
It's a podcast, they can't see how beautiful she looks.
Well, yeah, but
we're digressing.
Digress.
But power and knowledge, actually, is what's coming out of that for me. It's power, it's knowledge, and things often come back to power and knowledge and money.
Yeah.
And who's in control, who's rich, who's ruling, if you're...
Yeah.
It's
Sorry. It was like in the 16th, 17th centuries with the witchcraft, it was they would then often, their influences would be those of higher class with the money, because then they'd believe those who had money would then have the education to then back up their theories, and then that's what they believe.
And you said that with Anne, she was known as mistress, and that was really rare, yeah, that she wasn't good with, because often it was working class women that got accused.
Yeah. That's quite interesting as well, because if you think about it, the town healers, who were, you know, sort of an extension of what a witch was, but they were just more accepted than when somebody would call witch, you know. They had knowledge on how to help people, basically. You had an infection or something, they could help you with herbs, and it was because they helped people and they had the knowledge to help people.
So is this what happens when trust in society and in human beings and each other breaks down? What do you think?
Yeah. That's typically what happens when mass hysteria happens. People just start losing trust in everything, and they try and pin the blame on something because they don't know what's happening.
So Anne's trial happened at a really strange time, but things rarely happen in a vacuum. The context of the time is always really important. Why do you think the witch trials came to such prominence in the 16th and 17th century?
Well, during the 16th and 17th century, I think a lot of views changed. Obviously, post-Reformation. And there was a lot of religious uncertainty at the time. A lot of people were struggling with where they should be placing their views, and how political factors played into that is quite significant as well. So obviously there was a lot of stigma with what religion you associated yourself with. Obviously Catholicism was quite vain, and
there was a lot going on, wasn't there? Because you've got that kind of conflict between Protestant and Catholic, but you've also got the rise of something else. Does anyone want to talk about the rise of another kind of almost anti-religion or something that's not religion, Benjamin?
Well, the new belief, or rather non-belief, of atheism began to become more prominent at this time. Philosophers such as Thomas Hobbes began publishing treatises which, while not necessarily proving religion wrong, may have raised questions which were difficult to answer for people. And I think ever since the advent of the printing press in the 15th century, information had begun to spread much more quickly. So at this time you have books spreading about not only religious fervour, but also new ideas such as atheism prompted by the Enlightenment, which created a sort of heated atmosphere of religious conflict in some places, and allowed what were previously isolated elements of religious fervour to be spread through pamphlets and books, such as Malleus Maleficarum, which was a book written by a German monk all about witch hunting, which was allowed to spread all throughout Europe, which then spread these ideas about witches to create a very fixed sense of what to look for.
So do you think there was a sense then, with that as well as kind of a fear of atheism, that they almost needed to prove that witches were real, weirdly, in order to prove that therefore there was like a spirit world, and that kind of further proved the existence of God? What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think there was a sort of, I don't know, like a...
an anchoring into...
Yeah, exactly. There has to be evil in order for there to be good. Like a balance between both of the worlds, essentially, I think. And I want to say, like, push the idea of religion. They needed to have something for people to fear, to drive that. And I think having one where they could turn on their neighbours
and place blame on somebody else in order to make, I don't know, who would you say would be at the base of who's pushing this idea?
I think perhaps it might not be a deliberate, concerted effort to split communities, but one sort of arising naturally from more intense religious conflict and ideas that was provoking further division. The Civil War had ended fairly recently at this time, so divisions were rife amongst the general populace.
And actually, didn't Mr. Goddard suffer greatly because he was a royalist? Didn't he lose some of his money? So there could have been some kind of wanting to get back prestige or be seen to be taking part, maybe. There's all these elements.
I mean, for the lack of money, and after war, or the fear of war, can make people go to extremes to justify any of their actions. Where since the Civil War just ended, royalists and nobles lost money. The people were fearing because they were now in control of someone who wasn't a monarch, who wasn't the natural order of the world. They thought their world would go out of balance. They thought everything would just crumble beneath them. And since they did that, people went to the extremes and started questioning if God really existed. And read the rise of atheism, and they put it as a fear, which immediately makes it as if something's bad, because you're only fearful, you're not fearful of good things, you're not fearful of things that bring you happiness or things that make you comfort, you're fear of things that make you discomfortable, which they put on atheism. And that means that they had to find some way of proving atheism is a lie, which means they had to use something that also went to their extremes, just like atheism went to its extreme, such as bringing witches up to the surface of all their conspiracies and blaming people just across the street, people who vaguely matched the description, and they all just went to extremes because of fear.
I think that, yeah, you've definitely got a very good point there. People were, like, around the Civil War time. People needed to find something to believe in, but also put at the base of all their problems, instead of having to blame it on something that's quite a lot more real, real problems that they would have had back then, like disease, and, you know, they would have needed something to source that worry, if you know what I mean. I think that it was almost a comfort that it wasn't their own fault. There was this greater evil that separated them from good and bad.
So we've touched on this slightly. The perception of witchcraft changes with the time. For example, before the witch trials, I think it was actually pretty much tolerated. You know, you mentioned healing women who help people out. But now we're in another age of anxiety. Yet my instinct is that this isn't affecting witches this time. In fact, they're in some ways quite the opposite. So how do you think witchcraft is perceived differently today, and perhaps why?
Well, I think that social media has a huge impact on how witches and things are perceived today. So we do have sort of witches of our age, don't we? We have, there's especially for in the context of social media, you'll have influencers who use crystals and...
Yeah, you get tarot card readers as well and stuff.
And in a time where we have just gone through... It doesn't feel as recent to us now, but in the sense it was in the last 5 years, that's not even a decade, it was quite a recent age of huge uncertainty, because obviously this time we did deal with it a bit differently how we would have done throughout the rest of history. If I haven't already clarified, I do mean COVID. So they'll use crystals, like you said, tarot cards. There's obviously...
I think witches today are very much how they were before witches became such a big thing back then, because in the 16th and 17th century, witches were healers. They would work with herbs to make you feel better if you were ill.
Before that, and too.
Even before, for example, Anne Boddenham, it's even seen that she worked in London and trained with the elite magician Dr. Lamb, and so.
Yeah, she was quite accepted, but I think it's interesting you mentioned COVID too, and how naturally they were kind of healers and herbs, because I wonder if you feel that something about how post-COVID, and also when the world is like politically frightening with war and things, we turn back to nature as kind of soothing.
Yeah.
And I've noticed a lot of like the witch influencers are very much into kind of what would be seen as a kind of nature magic, almost what you would see as a sort of green witch in a way, and seasonal things and plants and herbs. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's a sort of notion of returning to your roots, which rings quite nicely with what you were saying about nature. It is very like nature driven, I think, because it's so simple but so comforting. I can't really pinpoint what it is, and jump in if you can. Like, especially, well, another point, it's often, this is probably a stereotype, but there's often women as well, like with the witches who are influencers. I'm not sure why that might be. I think it could be to do with maybe just feeling, maybe it's just more common or more stereotypical to feel connected to nature if you're open to being more vulnerable, which, I don't know, maybe that's not, like...
Though potentially... Sorry.
No, it's okay, carry on.
It is the case that the witches who we see are mostly women, because we don't see witches so much on a day-to-day basis and think, you're a witch.
Yeah.
The ones we see and know, identify as witches, are most stereotypically on social media.
Yeah.
And so potentially it's always that stereotype that has driven women to be comfortable to come out, and the males who maybe identify as witches just as much are almost more scared to show themselves as...
That's interesting. So do you think there's a political element in that confidence women feel to identify openly as witches is connected to the sort of recent resurgence in feminist thoughts and girls feeling more confident to talk about being a feminist in a positive way? Or do you not?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that after... I don't know, just recent events, and it was like a decline in feminism that, like, after COVID, and like people have had the time to like find things about themselves, and after you're able to come out, and just women and girls have just come out of COVID and just like accepted what they've decided to, like, be a witch, for instance, and stuff.
Mm. And it's interesting, do you think actually, in a kind of ironic way, it's out of something that can cause a lot of this age of anxiety, e.g. social media, which I think we probably all agree is a bit of an anxiety fueler in many ways, the witch influences and that kind of new way of perceiving witchcraft is actually a kind of quite gentle and positive thing coming out of something that could be part of the age of anxiety.
Yeah, I think it is a big comfort, even though, like, even if you don't, like, sort of believe in that kind of thing, it is still quite nice to see people enjoy nature as much as they do. Because you think, there was a good portion of that year that we were all locked up inside, and we were all desperate to get out again. Even the people that were like, oh, I don't ever leave the house, you know, like, I'm like recluse or whatever. Like, you wanted, most people wanted to go back out and enjoy nature. And I think that's something that, like, you can even see it through one of the, what was it, one of the rules. You're allowed to go out for a walk per day because it's good for people.
Yeah.
It's good to be in nature and out in the sunshine or in the rain, whatever you prefer. It's something that if you were a human and you lived without, you'd see physical differences. You'd notice like worsened mood. You wouldn't have like, you wouldn't be as fit as you would be if you went out and go into nature regularly, mind and body. It just wouldn't, humans have to have that interaction with nature in order to function.
But so, at the same time, the walks and the time outside was limited to an hour a day.
Yeah.
And so that potentially could be a fueler for this age of anxiety, because as you're saying, not getting out affects your mental, physical health, it affects everything.
Yeah.
And so if you're being allowed up for an hour a day, that's not much time, and so that's going to affect your physical health. But also, there's the feeling of it's so controlled, almost, that they're controlling even how much time you can be outside. And that, along with the lack of being outside, will affect your mental health and therefore drive anxiety. So it's possible that people are turning to witchcraft to, say, help their mental health, and as it's largely nature witchcraft that has seen a resurgence, they're almost maybe treating it as a replacement for going outside.
Yes.
Really interesting. And I guess that sense of it going from something that could get you sentenced to death to part of the sort of well-being movement.
Yeah.
And that sense of it is a real positivity. And I guess you could even link it to a, you know, wider thinking of other aging of anxiety issues, like sort of how terrifying climate change is, that, you know, that sense of being more aware of nature and appreciative of the environment is actually quite politically important at the moment.
I mean, we definitely saw a real decline of mental health in, like, after we came out of COVID. Like, you could see it slowly decline during, but then as soon as you got out, everyone was coming out with it. It was all becoming a really, really big issue. So I think witchcraft was a way of, returning to something that comforted them in ways other things couldn't.
So it's all changed from back in the day to a sort of positive feel.
Yeah, positive spin.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for listening. We've been the Salisbury Museum Young Producers Lab, and we hope we've given you something interesting to think about. Goodbye.